Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning and welcome to Spirit Mornings. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
And today, Chris, we're joined again by Elizabeth Kelly. Elizabeth is the author of several books, articles, and short stories, and as well, she's a jazz singer who's even released a couple of CDs. You may recall we talked to Elizabeth about one of her books, May Crowning, Mass, and Merton, 50 Reasons I Love Being Catholic, won a Catholic Press Association Award last year. And Elizabeth is a native of my home state in Minnesota. Today, Elizabeth is joining us to talk about her latest work, Heaven in You, and You in Heaven, Unveiling Eternity on Earth. Elizabeth, good morning and welcome back to the program. As I said, always a treat to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Elizabeth, I think this is just a phenomenal book. You know, when I've read books about heaven, one of the books that has always touched my heart was Peter Kraef's book, Heaven, the Heart's Deepest Longing. It was just such a beautiful work. And on the back of Heaven in You and You in Heaven, Unveiling Eternity on Earth, Peter Kraef even says, a winsome, humane, sound, and spiritual book that touches the heart. This is heaven for ordinary people, not scholars or speculators. That's high praise.
Yeah, that was a very great treat. I am, of course, like so many, a great admirer of the extraordinary volumes that he has contributed on behalf of the Church and the faith. And so it was a very great treat to hear from him.
I think this is an important work, too, Elizabeth, because in today's world, especially in our faith life, so often we fall into a sense of hopelessness because we've lost sight of our final destination. We've lost sight of what it is that God wants to share with us for all eternity. And I think Heaven in You and You in Heaven gives us a tangible sense of what awaits us because of the gifts that we've been given here.
I think you're exactly right that as a culture, we've become so distracted, we've kind of fallen out of love with the idea of heaven, and we tend to think of it as two separate realities, that there's we're on earth and then there's heaven out there somewhere. And the image that Kraef uses, which is so powerful, I think, is to think of it more as, you know, the embryo, the fetus in the womb. The fetus in the womb is already very much a part of the wider world around it, even though he's not necessarily perceiving it in the same way that he will once he's born.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're already a part of the created reality of heaven. You know, this is not some separate reality. It's a part of the one created reality. We're already in it, and it's just a matter of sort of recalibrating ourselves to become more aware of it in our daily lives and to manifest more of it in our daily lives.
I think what you've captured so beautifully in the book is the fact that here on earth, we are given glimpses of God's creation and his activity in our life here, and it really reflects what we can anticipate in heaven as a more perfected, more excellent version of what we experience here.
Wholeness and completion. You know, again, to turn to Dr. Kraef, he talks about how you know, it's going to be infinitely more. It's not going to be 5 times better or 20 times better than it is on earth. It's going to be infinitely more. So it's, in a way, it is very difficult for us to place our human minds into that reality, but it doesn't make it any less true that we can't entirely comprehend it. And even just sitting here in my little cubby hole here in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm looking out the back windows, and just absolutely spectacularly beautiful today. And even in something as simple as a beautiful day or a beautiful breeze or nature or something like that, all of that draws our thoughts to a transcendent place because we are transcendent beings. It's that eternity written on our hearts when we note something beautiful around us. It's really an operation of heaven, even in that.
I thought it was really poignant when you were talking about heaven as home and how you got a sense of what heaven as a home became real for you when you returned home to Minnesota. I mean, it's that we do get glimpses, don't we, of what those emotions, what those feelings, and what our senses will perceive.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And as in the case, as I'm talking about in the book, you know, having left Minnesota when I was quite young to go to school and graduate school, and I traveled and worked and did different things, and then coming back as an adult, again, it's even better than it was that I than when I was young. It's even better than the way I remembered it. And I think that that's really going to be a true reflection of heaven as well. It's going to be better than we can even imagine.
I also think that the section on He Then Is Beautiful in Heaven, talking about what beauty is, as you just spoke of looking out the window and seeing in creation that beauty that will be reflected in heaven, but also in, you know, our places of worship. When you return to the church in St. Paul, I mean, and I think that was the goal of so many who designed churches years ago, was to help us to have heaven and earth connect, like it's a ladder, an image. Sometimes in the newer churches, you don't maybe necessarily have that same type of feeling, but we do get a sense in beauty and in art what heaven will be like for us.
I think it is. It's really important that our artists be well catechized, because it's going to reflect the outpouring of their art. And, you know, I think what you say is really true, that there may have been times in the past where it was much more of an apparent reality to architects and designers that the Mass is really where heaven and earth commingle most concretely for us. And that space, designed to house and uphold such an extraordinary event, really needs to reflect that. And it's interesting, even if you take that notion with you, when you go into the Mass and start to look around the architecture of whatever place of worship that you're in, I'm sure you'll find hints of that somewhere.
Right. And Elizabeth, I think not only is the structure that we participate in the Mass so important, I mean, you really outline how the Mass deeply affects you, you know, through the Liturgy of the Word, through the Eucharist, I mean, right on through. I mean, it's so important, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And I think, you know, I said this, I think, before the last time we spoke, that any book or any writing that I do, it first helps me, it first teaches me, it first heals me, and then, you know, God willing, it'll go out to a broader audience and it will help to do the same things for other people who read it. And in working on this book, it was just such a great reminder that, you know, when I walk into the Mass, to open up my ears and my eyes and my heart and really pay more attention. I mean, heaven is completely evident and apparent and participating when you listen to the words of the liturgy. It's just impossible to miss. And yet, we've heard them so often that I think sometimes we tend to just kind of shuffle through and amen, we get up, sit down, we go through the motions. And it's really important that we remind ourselves to listen and participate as though we were in the company of heavenly creatures, because we absolutely are.
You know, so often we just go through the motions, Elizabeth, and I think you had that moment where you had said that you were at Mass, and it was at the moment, a moment of the holy, 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 and you said the line that was spoken, that great prayer that is given for us, and so with all the choirs of angels, we proclaim your glory and join in their unending hymn of praise.
Mm-hmm.
We are joining, aren't we? It's not as though that's something that happened. I mean, it's happening right at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even when you read it, I got sort of goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really true. And that is, I hope, if my book does anything, I hope that it kind of reawakens in people that reality.
Because it is. I mean, at that moment, at the Mass, this is a glimpse of heaven. But unless we've been catechized properly as children and then even as adults, to listen to those Eucharistic prayers, I mean, to imagine that, and the gift of the imagination is so important, but to be able to imagine that we are singing with angels, we are surrounded by the angels, and the saints are singing with us.
Yeah, it's pretty overt, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty hard to miss. And yet, you know, I think I was saying in the book, I was like 30 years old, and all of a sudden that line just struck me, and I was sort of struck dumb. I just thought, why haven't I been thinking about this? Why haven't I been participating as though this were true? And I mean, the liturgy is so exquisite. There isn't one word out of place. You know, we've got several thousands of years and some of the finest spiritual and intellectual contributors who have appointed the liturgy just exactly as it is. It's not a mistake that it's just a miracle. I mean, they don't just sort of throw that haphazardly out like it's some kind of grand metaphor. You know, it's a literal participation in heaven.
It is something that you may not be able to see with your eyes, but you can see it with your heart.
Yeah.
But if your heart is closed to it, if you are not praying from your heart, if you're not allowing yourself to believe that, you know, that inkling that's saying this is really happening, you will be closed off from it, won't you?
Well, I think you really nailed the phrase when you talk about, you know, allowing your heart to believe. And, you know, people are wounded. We're living in a really weird world sometimes, a very wounded world. And it takes, you know, the opening exhortation, closing exhortation, really borrow a lot from Pope Benedict's writings, and just saying it takes courage to believe in heaven again. It takes boldness. It takes a boldness of spirit and a deep spiritual courage to say, you know, I'm going to believe. I'm going to act as though this is true. And even if sometimes we have to go into the Mass or into our daily lives and just say, you know, Lord, I don't have the faith, but I'm going to act like it's true just for today. I'm just going to act like it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually I think that will be met such that it comes to live in us, and God can grow us up, grow up this faith in us. But it does take a willingness. We have to allow God to come in. We have to become willing to drop our hands and say, all right, just take me, take my feeble little faith and grow with it and do with it what you will. But that's how we become heavenly creatures, you know. And it does take courage, especially in our modern world, which is so convinced that, you know, Wi-Fi and blogs are going to save us, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so profound when you say that you have to have the courage to believe, and to believe in the hope. The other day I was moved to go visit my dear friend who actually visiting her grave. She died in 1996.
Oh.
And I remember being at her bedside when she was at that moment when she was dying. And she taught us, all of us, how to do it. She had a hope, a firm hope in what was to come. An actual, maybe even just, if you could see it in her face, a joy of anticipation. And it taught us all so much. It is that moment of death. I think sometimes when we pray in the rosary, we pray for a holy death. It's so important that we do have that understanding of where we're going.
Well, and I think that one of the most attractive features about that is the kind of fearlessness that kind of faith will grow up in us.
Mm-hmm.
There was a seminarian that I got to know when I was in Rome. He's studying here at St. Thomas, and he was over in the Rome program as well, and he's curiously also a huge fan of Peter Creighton, so we had some great conversations while I was working on the book and trying to finish it up, and he truly cannot wait to get to heaven. And this isn't a youthful denial or naivete. He has, I think, an unusual charism in his hope in eternity and in heaven and in the goodness of the Father that he will be joined with him in full communion one day. And you could see it in the way this young man walked around in the world. He
mm-hmm.
was carefree is the wrong word. He was free of earthly fear. He was kind of unflappable. And it wasn't that he wasn't a serious person. He was deeply intelligent. You know, he was studying, you know, he was reading the Summa every day. I mean, he was really a fantastic kid and very much present to everybody around him. But it was really a beautiful thing to see that kind of hope in someone, and not to diminish in any way the example of your beautiful friend's testimony as she was dying, but to bring that hope even forward further, even into, you know, this young man's life. He's in perfect health. For all I know, he's, you know, hit by a bus. He's not going to heaven anytime soon. And, but he still, he lived with that kind of eternal hope, and watching how it affected how he moved around in the world is really quite a testimony as well.
To go back to my friend, her name is Joni, on her tombstone it has, "Be not afraid, I go before you always." And she is someone I know, as I was saying goodbye, I said, I long to see you face to face once again. And the beauty of what we have in the communion of the saints is that we will see her. And even, you know, recently I returned back from my own trip to Rome, where all those martyrs and all those men and women who are the saints, they did the same thing that Joni has done. They're pointing us the way to not be afraid, to be courageous, to do, as you put in the book, the exaggerating thing for God.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's another thing that we tend not to take great advantage of enough, is just the communion of saints and the examples of all these men and women who have gone before us. And even men and women that we may not meet, I'm reminded of, somebody handed me a little prayer card, I can't remember, a long time ago, and it's one of the prayers that you pray for a child that is in danger of abortion. So I pray that every day, and one of the suggestions on the bottom of this little prayer card is, you know, just think you might meet this little baby someday in heaven. You may not even have any idea who it is. And I mean, so there, I find it difficult when people say that church is boring, or, you know, the Catholic faith is boring. I just think it's the grandest adventure of them all. There's so many different layers and all of these things going on that we can't even quite see or perceive, and I often think of heaven as sort of the unraveling of all of these mysteries, but unto eternity, you know?
And I think you're absolutely right. The only way that you can counteract what the world would have you believe is reality is if you enter into heaven every day in your prayer. And for me anyway, I can't speak for other people, but my prayer can't be 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. I mean, I have got to spend several hours in prayer, whether it's, you know, throughout the day. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's 3 hours straight, but it's
right,
you know, praying the rosary three times a day and getting to Mass and looking at the Liturgy of Hours and just walking and just contemplating God's goodness. You can't battle a world 24/7 assault if you don't dip into heaven for a good chunk of your waking hours.
Right, yeah, I think that that's really important what you're saying, and that, you know, not everybody's going to be able to jump into 3 hours right away.
Right.
Something that you can build upon. It's like, you know, training for a marathon. You start with a mile, and then you run two, and then you run three, and even, and I like what you also said, too, about interspersing it throughout the day, and there are lots of ways we can do that, again, using the imagination. You know, I keep an icon on my desk and just turning to that every now and again throughout the day. It's kind of this piercing reminder of, again, the reality. And I'm really lucky. I live in a place where there is Mass practically on the hour, every hour in this neighborhood. There's perpetual adoration within a stone's throw at several Eucharistic adoration chapels. I mean, maybe not everybody is as fortunate as I am, but I think it's what you're saying is a good reminder. There are lots of different ways that we can dip into it, and not only can, but need to, must.
Yep.
It's a requirement. It's not an option, you know.
That's exactly right. And, you know, as my actually, it was a friend of mine who pointed that out to me. You know, when I don't want to scare people with 3 hours, but it can culminate if you just take those glimpses, you know, whether it's in the car or it's, you know, again, in a walk, or even as you have pointed out in the book, it's just the incidences of everyday life. And I think that's what is so nice about Heaven in You and You in Heaven, because you show us by your example how you can dip into heaven and touch it just in the what we do normally. We've just taken it for granted, though.
Mm-hmm. And don't you find, too, in your own experience that there's kind of some momentum? It's like once you turn in the direction of heaven, you know, it feels like almost a downhill slope in some way that mm-hmm. heaven just rushes then to meet you. You know, it's just a matter of us turning our attention toward it. And then all of a sudden, it's everywhere. And not like life gets any easier. In fact, I think in some ways life gets a lot more difficult, but it becomes more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life's difficulties have deep meaning, and they are deeply redeemed as well. Versus just, you know, you're suffering through this life like a dumb animal or something. But I think that people need to be encouraged as well that, you know, you really can offer so very little, and God will rush to meet you to fill in what you lack.
I agree. I don't think it's necessarily, and maybe I'm not the all-knowing, but I don't think it's necessarily that suffering gets piled on to you because you've turned to God and to Him and sharing home with heaven. But I think it's because you have glimpsed the joy to come that there is sadness when sin creeps in or suffering. It seems a little more acute just because there's that extreme, isn't there?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And I guess just to, my thought was more to prevent people from tempting the idea that if they recalibrate their lives towards heaven, that suddenly it will get much easier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Or problem-free. It might. I hope it does.
Yep.
But that hasn't always been my experience. But and it has given me a method by which to effectively, prayerfully, and I hope in a holy way, to confront and embrace the suffering that I'm given.
And I think that's very clear. Not very many of the saints led a life that did not entail some type of suffering, as every individual on this planet goes through. I mean, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the richest person on the planet or if you're the poorest. Life is hard. There's pain and suffering in every single life.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
But there, the promise is of the world to come, and that He will make all things new. That is kind of, as you said, a baby being born, it suffers having to get through that canal. It suffers having to go through that moment of birth. But there's that the joy of living in the world and the love that it will experience when it can see you face to face. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, and I find it, too, very effective or powerful image when you think, you know, what's the first thing the baby's met with is embrace.
Mm-hmm.
They're embraced by the nurse, the doctor, the mother. You know, the very first thing after we go through that kind of traumatic birthing experience is to be held by the one that loves us the most, ideally. And so that is a great consolation.
It is, and I thought you also, as a footnote in the book, you handled the subject of purgatory really well. Do you mind sharing that imagery? Because I think for a lot of people, they don't understand exactly what purgatory, why that's necessary.
Oh, and you mean in terms of the kind of getting ready for the ball? That
exactly. Yeah. I thought that was perfect.
Well, the image that I was using was, you know, imagine that you're out working in the garden or doing something, and you have a knock on the door, and it is your favorite person on earth who is inviting you to go to a very elegant ball with feasting and oyster and the whole thing, and it's something that you've wanted to do your entire life. And, of course, he answered yes, and you want to come, but you are completely unprepared. You're dirty from head to toe. You don't have the right clothes on. And so, of course, before going to this ball, this place that you just cannot wait to get to, you'd want to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't fully enjoy the ball if you showed up looking the way that you did and smelling the way that you did.
Mm-hmm.
All of that, you'd want to be prepared.
Right.
So purgatory is very much like that. It's a place of preparation such that we can fully embrace and enjoy the glories of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we would feel out of place. I think it was Cardinal Newman who writes about how, you know, if you don't want to go to, if you're not prepared for heaven, you wouldn't feel comfortable there. You mm-hmm. wouldn't be happy there because you would, it would be in, you'd be in such stark contrast to all of the holiness around you. You couldn't even bear it. It would be too painful. So purgatory is a great grace in that it helps us to prepare so that we can fully enter in.
Well, I think this is an absolutely phenomenal work. It's called Heaven in You and You in Heaven, Unveiling Eternity on Earth by Elizabeth Kelly. Elizabeth, I wish we had more time, but do you have any final thoughts?
It's my ardent wish that anything that I would write in this book would help to awaken in people the reality that you are deeply desired, and that no matter what your physical vocation, you know, wife, husband, single, priest, religious, we are all called to come and follow. And part of how we do that is the ways that we manifest heaven on earth. That's part of how we come and follow. And I guess I'm not being very articulate, but you know, I just pray for everybody, and every page that I write is also a prayer for anybody who's reading the book, so I hope they'll be encouraged.
Oh, I think mm-hmm. you've been more than articulate, Elizabeth. I think this has been, you know, if you can help people to stop trying to see the world with the eyes of what's in front of them, and again, to appreciate and accept those glimpses that we get with our heart. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and to trust those and to believe that and to grow in that, I think that's part of the gift in which you give everyone in heaven and you in heaven.
And, you know, it takes courage, too. You know, if you're sitting there a little bit quaking in your boots at the thought of heaven and hell and some of these very big ideas, big concepts, big words, it's all right, you know. It's an appropriate response. And you know, Pope Benedict is not sloppy with his words, and he says it takes courage and boldness to believe in heaven again. And so you're not alone in feeling that maybe a sense of trepidation and starting in on this journey. But you will be met. You will be met.
Yeah. Well, as you said, you don't have to have a PhD in sanctity.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, just read The Lives of the Saints. That will get you there.
Right. Yes, yes. Thank the Lord for that.
You bet. We're talking this morning with Elizabeth Kelly, Heaven in You and You in Heaven, Unveiling Eternity on Earth. And I guess the closing line would be, let's all keep our eyes on the prize here, folks. There is eternity waiting for us. And Elizabeth has some great recommendations and guidelines here and how to take what we would call the heavenly path. Again, Elizabeth, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Always a treat to have you on with us.
Thank you so much, Deborah.